Welcome, civic geeks and political freaks, to episode 90 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where the high-minded come to bring their minds right back down to earth. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And tonight we're happy to welcome back our special guest, April, to discuss with us the topic of geek social responsibility. But before we discuss that topic, let's kick things off in Nerdstravaganza style with our weekly geekly, Geekly Weekly Update. Ladies first, April, what have you been up to in your geeky life this week?
Well, the fact that I get to go first means that I get to steal both of yours and talk about gaming. So this past week, we did the first Stranahan House Museum game night. And outside of the rain, I would say it was pretty successful. I think it was a good night. We played, now I can't think of the name, Station Master. So we played Station Master. And Brian from the Adventure Game Store came out and taught us all how to play, even had a nifty little video explaining the game play, and it was fun. It was good. I enjoyed it, and we had two other people come out that are definitely returning. So all sorts of excited about doing game night at the museum. And in fact, my 70-something caretaker wants to come one night and play a game too. He was all sorts of excited that these young, crazy kids were all into board games and card games and not attached to computers in their pockets. And he thought that was really cool that we were doing that at the museum and is very excited about the future of that.
You didn't tell him about us Googling errata on our smartphones, did you?
No.
Or rather than reading the instructions, watching an online video.
Right. Trying to get on the Wi-Fi to watch the video of how to play the game so that we could then put away the technology and play the game.
Yes, so game night. Awesome. It was a great kickoff to what will hopefully be a continuous series of events, and we are happy to do it at the historic Stranahan House Museum. Anything else, ma'am, or should I kick it over to Brian?
I think so. That's about it.
All right, Brian, then over to you, sir. What have you been up to?
Well, I took my what has become weekly trek to Tate's wonderful comic book shop in Fort Lauderdale, hoping beyond hope that my Star Wars books would finally come out, and I finally just asked straight up, like, "Hey, what happened to Star Wars?" And very happy to report that apparently. Dark Horse just closes down for like a month. They just like take a month off for Christmas.
Okay.
So I'm not like weeks behind in my buying habits like I thought I was. I just need to wait until they start cranking them again, and I'll have my The Star Wars number 5 and Star Wars retelling number 12, I think, and life can continue as it was.
That's good to know. Keep me, actually, after the show, update me on those, because I want to make sure that I'm up to date for whenever Dark Horse decides to come back to work.
I'm relieved to hear I'm not the only one that was sweating their absence. I'm kind of really enjoying those series.
Same here.
And wow, that was about it. April stole game night. That's what I was planning to talk about, but she had to yank it. I'm not really reading anything good. Dark Horse and Game Night. That's about it.
That brings it to me. I beat the campaign in the PlayStation 3 game called Dragon's Crown. I defeated the ancient dragon, only to then be told after the credits roll that there are now two more ancient dragons I can defeat if I want an extra challenge, and I'm not sure I do. Really fun hack and slash beat 'em up. I've talked about it quite a few times, and I recommend it. There was, of course, game night, which was an awesome event, as I mentioned before. And I guess one final update I have on sort of what we might term the non-traditional geekiness front is that I postponed last week's recording so that I could instead geek out and watch the State of the Union address. And I guess I'm wondering if that's really geeking out. It feels like it is, because it seems like most people I talk to are only very marginally politically engaged. They show up to vote like during presidential elections because they know of one person they want to vote for on the ballot. So I guess my question is, am I right in characterizing political involvement as a non-traditional form of geekiness? And should it be, really?
I would like to take a moment just to ask people to remember that we're not talking about something that all geeks do. This isn't a Star Wars thing. This is something that people geek out about. Are there civic service geeks?
Yes, and with that said,
our resident civic service geek.
Well, I think one of the important distinctions here is discussing civic service versus political, because I think a lot of people shy away from talking about politics because they start seeing or thinking of the crazy people who post on Facebook or the crazy people who post on Reddit.
The crazy people who debate Bill Nye.
Right. All those crazy people. And that obviously there's a very large line drawn and someone's on the right or the left. And, you know, they're a whack job one direction or they're a whack job another direction. And they get caught up in that and they don't see the importance of actually just paying attention to what's happening in your world. And I think that I used to describe myself as a political junkie. And I would avidly pay attention to, you know, State of the Union address and every time the president would make a speech and everything that was happening, and I would watch C-SPAN. But now I think I pay more attention to local politics because I actually realize how much more that affects me and I geek out on that. But I agree that I think a smaller group of society actually pays attention to those things. And it saddens me, but I think that a lot of people don't get overly involved in those type of things. And just from, I hate to use Facebook as a gauge, but you can, that more people did play-by-plays of the Grammys or Oscars or whatever award show was on a couple weeks ago versus people doing play-by-plays of the State of the Union address.
Yeah, and that's sad, I have to say. So let me ask sort of a follow-on question from that one. Given that we've now reaffirmed the sort of dearth of politically and civically minded people, and I want to say, though, we're sort of putting social involvement or civic involvement in a separate category with politics. I think as you become more socially and civically involved, your political consciousness will necessarily evolve as you see the consequences of politics playing out in your local stage. But let me ask you this. Doesn't it kind of stand to reason that nerds and geeks, basically our people, our core audience, who are so good at fixating on whatever their passions are, should be politically involved? Should they not kind of be the vanguard of those who are politically aware, socially aware, and civically involved?
Yes, they should. I mean, that's the whole thing. Okay, so take the whole whatever Geek Nation. It's a large group of very intelligent, passionate people who, when they rally around a topic, actually can get shit done. There are people who very easily you get 1,000 of them to rally around a theme or a topic and can change the way a company markets something or change the way a product is produced or even change the way people perceive things. But let's use that momentum for good. This is a whole group of people who are incredibly intelligent, who can build worlds and take over nations, but let's actually do that in the real world.
I'd like to ask a question, and maybe this is just because I so recently read through Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, quote-unquote Blade Runner, but do you think geeks are known for their empathy? They may be suited, but they may not be the best people for it.
That's a really interesting point.
So you're saying that they lack empathy?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I don't know about the most part. I think for some part, a lot of them have kind of issues connecting to human beings.
I think, and this is going to be a common theme for me during the entire discussion, that it's all about how you pitch it to the nerd and or geek. I think that you might be onto something, and that like they're sort of islands onto themselves, and they don't really necessarily feel plugged into the broader society, hence their status as members of sort of a niche subset of humanity. But if you spin it a certain way, if you, rather than saying, hey, you should be involved for your well-being as well as the well-being of your fellow human being, you say, wouldn't this society be more like the utopian Star Trek society of the future if we did X, Y, and Z? Wouldn't this get us a little farther down that road? I think you might get a little more buy-in. Case in point, the current healthcare retooling that we're undergoing here. You get to stay on your parents' insurance till you're 26. Well, that's probably good news for most of these people that aren't going to be leaving home anytime soon.
That's the same time they're still living in their mother's basement.
Right. But I think a better way to put that is, sure, these are the short-term benefits of it, but think of it differently. We're going to have a comprehensive healthcare system with electronic medical records, so no matter where you are, your doctor's going to be able to plug in and tailor care to you specifically. Isn't that cool? You're going to be able to buy your insurance online. You're going to be able to shop online. We're really taking healthcare into the future. We're not just turning it into an evil, like, socialist enterprise. You know what I mean?
See, they should have had you marketing for them, because that just makes it sound so much more cool and exciting.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. I think worded correctly, you can get a lot of buy-in from, like, the smart people Brian just mentioned.
I think we need to create a PDF of LARPing rules and just invite people to show up like for civic service D&D at the next civic service meeting.
Right. And you're going this direction. I think if you spin anything the right way, if you appeal to the sense of I'm a little bit, I won't say better than you. If you appeal to the smugness that comes with being a geek, and say, look, you're a cut above. Not only are you great at Dungeons and Dragons and video games and, you know, painting figurines, now you're more involved than the average troglodyte when it comes to making your environment better. And here's why. Because you volunteered for this. Because you campaigned for that, etc.
But what is it? What is that piece that will make someone want to volunteer? Or what is the thing that makes them want to
belonging,
step out of their personal realm to pay attention?
Well, let me step in here, because this is how I always felt. And I think maybe it's not the right way to do it, but it certainly works. What do you mean you don't want to be the hero?
There you go. Make them feel like they belong, either as part of a group or as the standout hero or as part of a super secret team of superheroes that get the job done where the average mortal doesn't.
What do you mean you don't want to save the world with your great ideas and natural ability?
Right. And these people are smart enough to know that that comes across as somewhat patronizing, but they like that kitsch. They like the, I hate to use this overused term, irony in that, I think, too.
So the whole problem with why people are not getting civically engaged is just a bad marketing plan.
Right. They think a bunch of like slick lawyers and dumb jocks run the country and there's no place for the guy from the science club, essentially.
Well, and that's one of my biggest problems I have with people is that when I try to talk about, hey, this thing is happening locally and you should really pay attention to it because it is going to affect your life, people are always like, oh, all politicians are crooks and they're all assholes and nothing you do can change anything, or the wonderful teachings that my father gave me, which is you can't fight City Hall. And, you know, everyone's father passes down words of wisdom to them that my father's words of wisdom. And people, like, they give up. But that's what I don't understand. You'll play the same goddamn game for 3 years just to beat it, but you'll give up over being able to change a local zoning law or to, you know, fix the Everglades or to do something that actually could probably happen in 6 months.
I think you've touched on something really important, which is, I don't want to say gamifying, but rather putting out there a goal, a dragon to slay, a game to beat, a mission to accomplish. I think that there are barriers to civic involvement and a muddying of the political waters on purpose. I think that those who are professionally involved in politics and local civic institutions, that sort of thing, don't want earnest people coming in and taking their cushy jobs away. Okay, there, that's what I meant to say.
I think that's a real big misconception, though. And I'm speaking on a local level, because I honestly think that more value can come from trying to get people active on a local level. I don't think on a local level, the people who are necessarily in place they're not overwhelmed with power and money. Take Fort Lauderdale, for example. All our city commissioners have full-time jobs. They do not generate a lot of money from their role as city commission, and in fact, it probably does actually cost them more in the time that it takes them to work on city commission issues and the things that they have to attend, which they have to pay for out of their own pocket. And it's not like they're in some penthouse of some city hall, you know, with the cigars and the brandy and the... I always picture the whole Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles, they're all in suits and everything.
Right.
But that's not what it is. I mean, every single one of our city commissioners actually has a full-time job, which they have to try to do on top of all the requirements of being a city commissioner. I do think, especially in Fort Lauderdale, there are some people locally who do try to control the strings and do try to control the politics in the sense of some of our larger business leaders and longtime wealthy families. And I'm not going to name names because of what I do for a living, but the people who are actually able to do jobs, especially currently, are there because at some point they felt that they could make some sort of a difference, and that they may enjoy the recognition and the ability to be in front of the crowd and the love and the gratitude or whatever you want to call it, but it's not because, you know, they get to fly on jets and be part of the in crowd and the A-list.
Let me ask this, speaking of who has proper marketing. That may be the reality, but is that the perception anywhere? Or is the perception that, you know, this kingly 1% buy every important vote, and unless you have $1 trillion to donate to a cause, you don't matter? The common perception.
Well, I think the common perception gets skewed because here in the state of Florida, we have a governor who won like $75 million he spent to be elected, which just imagine the amount of people that you could feed, clothe, educate, and house with that money. But that's the misconception that goes along with it. And I think many people just have this long time just notion that, you know, politicians are crooks no matter who they are, and you can't do anything to fight it. Hence the you can't fight City Hall. And they never take a chance to change that perception.
I certainly hold that perception. I won't say I believe in the thought that you can't fight City Hall, but I think that there are entrenched interests at the local level. And if it's such a selfless role to play, and if these people sacrifice so much, I'm left to wonder why they seem to keep coming back for more every time they can, if there's no benefit to them. But that's me being cynical, and I don't want to be too cynical in this episode.
Well, no, I mean, I'm speaking about Fort Lauderdale because I pay a lot of attention to what's happening politically in Fort Lauderdale. Prior to getting on this call, I was watching the city commission meeting on TV. But I will tell you that some of our county commissioners leave a bad taste in my mouth because I believe some of them are in it for more selfish reasons, which may be larger political aspirations, or unfortunately locally we've had some local politicians be indicted for kickbacks and things like that.
Okay, so we'll go on unofficial record as holding all of our citywide officials above reproach and say that beyond the confines of our fair city of Fort Lauderdale, things get a little bit dicey.
Fort Lauderdale's amazing, and I might as well publicly admit that I have a girl crush on our mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go. It's now on tape. And I like our city commission. I think they're good people. I don't agree with everything that they do, but I also feel that I'm a little more aware of things that they do more than, say, my neighbor or your average person, because I pay attention. And I think it's just the fact of paying attention, which is what can set people apart.
Well, there you go. That gets us back on topic. So we'll leave it at you are an insider who gets your palm greased at every turn, and you love our government as a result. And we'll get back on topic, which you did get us back onto nicely there by saying being involved will dispel the can't fight City Hall myth in the minds of a lot of people. And it might be too much to expect from the average Joe and Jane, but I think for our people, for our core audience, it's not too much to expect, and we should do our part to get people of our ilk involved. And so, April, since you sort of fit that description, because you're thoroughly involved, as I mentioned, with all the palm greasing, and you are at least nominally of our tribe of nerds, geeks, etc., do you agree that the world or even the local community would be better if geeks were involved in the following? And Brian, also jump in here. First and foremost, I think we already touched on this, politics.
Well, I think definitely, yes. If you're living, breathing, tax-paying, then you should be paying attention. Because your votes do count, and there are people in other countries die for the opportunity to vote and express their opinion. So I may take it to the extreme, but I am very disappointed in people who aren't paying attention. And I wish we could go back to a time where the president gave like their weekly radio address, and that's what everybody listened to. They gather around the radio and they listen to what the president had to say. And now, you know, people complain, oh God, why is this speech taking so long? Why is this on every channel? Why this? Why that?
Right. I got Duck Dynasty to watch. Why is this on?
Exactly. Exactly. Because knowing how duck calls are made are more important things to know.
Yes. Brian, do you agree? Better for our people to be involved?
With a caveat. If you're going to become involved, if you're going to do the homework, do the legwork, yes, please become involved. Please stay involved. Please educate yourself. Please be active. If you're not going to do all that stuff, please don't vote. Please don't vote on emotions. Please don't. Well, this guy's white. This guy's black. This guy's a woman. This guy... Don't do that shit. It just fucks stuff up.
So my Democratic woman Jewish standard of voting is not a good thing?
Maybe a little narrow, I'm thinking. Just...
I'm joking. I actually have no party affiliation. I am not registered Republican or Democrat.
Good. Good for you. Same here. So before I move on to the next topic, I also want you guys to consider, as I ask these, some of the unsavory elements in our segment of the population, meaning the people whose social interaction skills are a little off, who practice questionable hygiene. Remember, to bring these people into polite society, in some cases, is going to require a little coaching and a little bit of refactoring. So bear that in mind as we go through this list. It's not all sunshine and rainbows.
And showers.
Well, it's going to have to be showers. I guess that's what I'm trying to say in short.
That's part of becoming involved.
Yes.
Being tolerable.
Okay, so go ahead, April.
Well, no, I mean, if I can just say, is that I think before becoming involved, I think there's a very easy first step for the majority of America, which is just become aware. So you don't need to leave your mother's basement to read a newspaper or locally. They broadcast our city commission meetings on public access or see what an agenda is. I mean, these are things that you can do without any outside interaction, without having to leave your home, just educating yourself on the topic. So to me, that's really step one before figuring out what side you want to take or what your stance is and becoming involved.
All right. Well put. Now let's move on to the next category. Do you think that the world would be a better place if nerds and geeks were more involved with I'm going to combine these volunteering and or charitable donations, either of time or material.
Yes, definitely. Volunteerism and donations provide charities with time, talent, and resources. So resources just not cash out of your pocket. Though, we all know that geeks have a disposable income that they can spend on games and technology, and pushing some of that the way of charities would be a wonderful thing. But donations of time and expertise is huge, and it satisfies a huge goal for charities, and I truly believe that everyone should volunteer.
Brian?
I agree. I think the thing that defines a geek or a nerd is passion, and I think people becoming passionate about whatever cause can only improve things.
So the next question that follows off that one is, are there causes, are there charities that would appeal to our target demographic, or do we need to, again, either through just repackaging or re-messaging, come up with quote-unquote geek causes that would have people flock to them? People of our ilk flock to them.
I'll cut in. I'd like to share a recent experience. I won't speak for you guys. I went to a place where 90% of the time, 90% of the people sit around playing games obsessively, forgetting about hygiene, forgetting about nutrition, forgetting there is an outside world. They do it for no reason other than that's what they do. We gave them an opportunity, not personally, but we took part in a opportunity for them to buck all the rules for fucking pennies and just do what they always do, but with less restrictions and more fun. And none of them showed up because it would have benefited someone else.
Wait a minute. You're speaking of a certain charity drive that would have coincided with their normal gaming schedule.
Those people would normally drive through hurricanes and earthquakes to play that damn game. You add on the, oh, but it'll save some guy from dying in the streets. And they're like, oh, God, I'm really busy today. I don't know if I can make it. 10 cents? You want 10 cents so I can field a mega unit from another faction? That's like 3 seconds of my life.
Wait, do you really think, okay, so without getting into even more specifics, you think that modifying the rules of this popular game such that every minor charitable donation you made improved your chances of winning was enough to drive these gamers away?
That's what the evidence points to. What else could it have been?
I don't know. Maybe it was just like a bad Saturday or something. I don't know.
Do you really think because it was a charitable thing, that's why they didn't show?
I'm asking you what the evidence is.
That just makes me feel awful.
Based on our only instance of being involved in such a thing, April, we'll build more historical data as we go forward as a civically involved organization here at the Nerdstravaganza podcast. But based on our one event, putting a charity spin on leisure makes nerds less likely to want to partake.
You couldn't stop them from doing it with a baseball bat 9 times out of 10.
Hey, if you show up here, everybody gets a free Mountain Dew. And for every Mountain Dew we give you for free, we give somebody a vaccination so they won't die of the flu this year. No way!
Well, you know what, though? That actually brings up a good point, because this is something that's been interesting to me. So Kickstarter. So you can fund a total stranger's project that they will then profit from later. That is a for-profit business venture that you are giving them their money to start because you're getting swag off of it.
Yes. But you not put just that, swag, exclusive.
Right.
Swag.
You're getting exclusive swag. And so, but then you can post whatever Kickstarter project. You can simultaneously post a, this will save somebody's life project under whatever. So then there's the sites like GoFundMe. Which is, you get no benefit outside of warm fuzzy feeling and knowing that little Timmy got a life-saving medical procedure. And most likely these Kickstarter projects, they're doubling the money that they needed, and the GoFundMe projects are possibly barely making goal.
I am pretty sure if you would just make before and after pewter miniatures of little Timmy in his iron lung and then standing on like the crumpled remains of the iron lung with a sword hoisted high and offered that as exclusive Kickstarter stuff, that you'd probably make like $3 million for his operation.
So it's just a matter of you're just using the wrong site. So therefore we're back to, you're just marketing yourself poorly. So Kickstarter could be help Timmy become a superhero in real life, like the fact that he could actually breathe on his own.
Yeah, I honestly think you could swing that. I think you could, you know, we need the mutagen compound from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hideout to give this guy the superpower of, you know, processing oxygen.
Yeah.
And people would be like, whoa, can I spend $5 extra to get the comic book?
I won't go so far as to say people that are that foolish, but if you gamified it, if you put a narrative around it, if you unlocked an achievement called the respirator, if you donated enough money toward lung cancer research, I think you'd get more buy-in. If you got a t-shirt with, like, you know, a dragon on it that said the respirator, and every person you saved got a corresponding t-shirt, so, like, you were somehow... Not only did they live, but now all these people who you saved had the same t-shirt as you or something like that, some kind of tchotchke. I think you'd get more buy-in, man.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so instead of doing this podcast, we now need to just take this as a panel to a fundraising convention and explain to nonprofit people what they're doing wrong.
Well, this is completely unproven. It's just a hunch. If it's for me saving, you know, little Timmy and saving little Timmy and getting a custom figurine in the mix, in the bargain, you know, I'm gonna go with the figurine.
Because the warm fuzzy feeling of saving little Timmy isn't enough.
Just do a little figure of him in you know, whatever, in the leg braces or something like that, and give it game stats, and then like give him +1 movement without the braces.
Somebody's going to knock this off in a fundraising campaign. That's totally going to happen.
I really think, to get more realistic with this, a little bit more realistic, if you got somebody who makes, like, cool stuff on Etsy or a company that makes things people like, and you just... I think for geeks, it comes down to lucre. There has to be something in it for them. And I'm not saying because they're horrible people. Like, I do give to the warm, fuzzy charities. I do. But I think... if you gamified things and people, I keep using that term gamified, but whatever, if you somehow enhanced things such that the charitable giving seemed incidental to the activity, and of course it wasn't the charity that we already went to because we know that one didn't work, I think you could get a lot more involvement in causes from geeks.
I think if you did that charity again and you just said, look, it's $5 to cheat, you'd raise like $1,000 an event.
Just wording it that bluntly?
Right. Don't even tell them what you're going to do with the money. No, I'm going to charge you $5 to cheat. What are you going to do with it? Shut up. You want to cheat or not? Okay.
Sadly, I think that's true, though. I do think, again, I think everything comes back to marketing, and I think that particular instance boiled down to poor marketing and understanding what they were getting. And I think it very clearly you have to speak to the audience and that they should have just been told, participate in this and we'll let you get away with anything. And then at the end, it could have just been, hey, great job, guys. Now we're going to give all this to charity.
We could have just auctioned off the trophies. Dude, this trophy is pretty sweet. $50. $75. $100.
Is there not going to be a redo of that particular charitable gaming event that we're alluding to but not really mentioning by name?
Yes, I think so. We'll see if it is successful or not. Hopefully our scientific observable data will fall to 50-50 instead of 100% of the time.
Yeah, that's the best we can hope for, but I'll take 50-50 over 100% failure anytime. So, all right, before we move on to the final portion of tonight's discussion, I want to say that we should commit ourselves to doing our part to ensuring that this local charity gaming event in which we want to take part succeeds, meaning we need to contribute to the marketing. We need to make sure we do our best to get the word out there ourselves.
Definitely agreed. But I'm a bad example because I just think that everyone should give to charity because it's the right thing to do. So, but we have to find a way to speak to the audience correctly.
Some people just need a kick in the head. They just need to be encouraged.
Truly, it is a good thing to do. And I can't share Brian's viewpoint that the idea that they might be helping others actually repelled people. But
that's really awful, and I'm very saddened by that.
I think it was just timing. We'll see on the next time out, but we will do our best to draw people in and aid in whatever way we can with the marketing effort. And in doing so, we will be civically engaged.
So now I want to know, you know, like, how do I gamify my charity's financial needs to get more people to want to donate? I think I need to brainstorm with you guys.
I love these sessions.
Well,
because obviously I need to do something that's going to attract people who solely desire, like, exclusive benefits.
So you're talking, of course, about, are we allowed to mention your particular institution by name on our show?
Yes, because to me, that's good marketing.
Okay. So
there's no April, bad press.
There's no bad press.
April manages the Moonlight Bunny Ranch brothel in Las Vegas. And she's here in Florida trying to... No, okay. So April runs the Stranahan House Museum, where we held our first ever game night, coincidentally. And she's asking us now to put on our consulting caps, since we've basically declared ourselves to be charity gamification consultants, to help her. What? You want more people in the door? You want cooler people in the door? You want rich people in the door? Who do you want?
All of the above, but I think I want a cooler, younger generation in the door with a desire to come back again.
Okay. And is the problem right now that you would like, you just want more visitors or on a regular basis, or would events help?
Events and members, because a member is somebody who gives a annual donation and makes a commitment that you hope they would continue coming back year after year and doing. And that's a stable revenue generator for us so that we can keep our operation going.
I've got one right away. Brian, do you have any to come to mind?
Oh, yeah. I've got tons. You go first.
All right. You need to become the headquarters, quote-unquote, of a steampunk and or cosplay costuming group, a named group, sort of like a 501st Legion type of deal where you've got like the little local squadrons, and you need to make them part and parcel of the Stranahan House because you fit, I guess, time-wise in with where they're going. I'm not saying historically that the Stranahan House necessarily falls into the, what is it, kind of industrial age, but it's old-timey enough to be a great HQ, a great setting, a great place for photo shoots and events, et cetera.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, we fit into the Victorian time period, and I think steampunk would be a perfect fit.
So was I wrong? Are you historically synced up with the whole steampunk scene?
Well, we can fall into the Victorian time frame. So for people who don't know the house as a museum, the house itself is like a living historic structure, which was built in 1901, so we fit into that kind of American Victorian time period.
There you go. Beautiful. So the Stranahan steampunkers convene there, I think. That's my suggestion.
You can just do the 1901st division of steampunk pirate hunters.
So like the 501st?
Well, it was established in 1901.
Yes.
Because of the proximity to the water and everything and the sailing culture, Brian?
Well, they beat up the pirates and the bootlegging and everything, too.
I like it. April, thoughts?
I like it. We have pirates here in Fort Lauderdale. We can make that happen.
Real live ones. So kind of play up the aquatic theme a little more, because you are right on the river, right on one of the main river running through Fort Lauderdale, the New River, right?
We are right there on the water. We have access to boats.
I did it.
How do we make this happen?
People like to dress up as steampunk. People like to dress up as pirates. They can be like good pirates. They can be privateers.
Well, you definitely need to take advantage of the synergies that exist between you and the water. And if there is a local outfit with a vessel who might contribute it to any sort of water-going event, that would really add a lot to it. So you've got the house as a port of call for this festive vessel of some sort. I'm not sure you know all the particulars about that, but that's a thought.
I have access to a pirate.
Okay, I don't really need to say anything else then, because we're done. What are you even asking us for? You have a pirate ship?
I have access to one. But again, it's what is it that people would want, and would they be interested in doing that? And I think that's the biggest challenge of everything that we've been talking about is, very clearly, you said to people, you can cheat and you can help charity, and no one showed up.
Okay, I spent a lot of time thinking about Kickstarter. Your $5 buy-in is, we'll, like, you know, spill some grog and say a prayer for your lost memory, or, like, we'll mention you, basically, for being cool, and that's it. Your $10 buy-in is a 1901st patch that they can add to their costume, or that they can just, you know, put in their scrapbook or whatever. It's a pittance to thank them for it, but it's something that they have that they can't get anywhere else. Your expensive, like, really meat of the donations is an outing with the pirates, or a party at the house with booze, with meet the captain, exclusive, like, you know, your dinner.
Yeah, like a mini pirate convention, or like kind of like a Renfest
for pirates.
Right, but yeah, you're the venue for it.
Why do I feel like you guys have been holding out on me? Like, you've just been waiting for this moment to show, like,
well,
all
no.
the phenomenal ideas you have.
There's no
holding
out. I
have no idea what a fantasy life I have.
As long as someone can dress in costume, you're like, once cosplay comes into it, you're all over it.
Honestly, this kind of stuff is just off the top of our heads. If you would stop going to your political cronies for ideas and start coming to us, things would work out better for you. That's all I'm saying.
Well, this is all still our first idea.
Right. This is only the beginning of what we can offer. If you can get us into the inner workings of the city and county, so we can get some of that, get on that gravy train with all the crooked politicians.
We can get your palms greased and you'll help me with the idea. I personally think this is phenomenal. I am, like, writing things down. Like, we're going to be doing this. It's pirate steampunk revolution in Fort Lauderdale.
I love it.
You can sell beer steins.
Yes.
That's like your $50 donation.
Yeah. You have rewards for different levels. And, you know, of course, it all ties into the Stranahan House memberships and that sort of thing. So there you go.
And just a side note to just point out that for people who don't understand what volunteering is, it really doesn't come in all forms. And it's not always like the grunt work that people don't want to do. Nonprofits rely on volunteers to do shit like this, like come up with ideas and encourage other people to participate.
We are currently looking for a cosplay accessory maker for flamingo mallets. That doesn't sound boring or tedious at all.
Flamingo mallets, as in those used in the Alice in Wonderland story? Am I reading into that right?
Yep.
Was that yet another theme at the Stranahan House that you're trying to cultivate, April?
We are actually in our fifth year of a Alice in Wonderland themed Mad Hatter's Tea Party.
And
this year, we have recruited Brian to help us with story-appropriate games to be played during the event. So we want to have a life-size or somewhere close to that chessboard, and we want to have the actual flamingo mallets and croquet game.
I've already got the furries on board. They're going to show up dressed as walruses and oysters. I just need someone to make a flamingo mallet.
I don't know how I feel about having furries at the museum.
Point is, though, the precedent is there for you doing theming and having groups associated with your cause. And I didn't know about the Alice in Wonderland thing, but I think this is an example of a sort of potential geek-inspired cause. And the pirate, the steampunk pirate one we were just talking about is definitely a prime example.
I'm very excited for this. I really am. I'm going to go into the office tomorrow and start working on how do we get steampunk pirates at the house.
Great. Now that we've washed your back, it's time for you to wash ours, because we need your help as well, April. As somebody who has run a successful museum and who is very involved in community building, as we just mentioned, we are trying to do our best to encourage the use of public transportation down here in South Florida. And you and Brian attended an event at a nearby train station, a nearby Tri-Rail station, Tri-Rail being our local commuter rail here in the South Florida area. So we have been brainstorming a geekification of Tri-Rail. We've been trying to figure out a way we can get, for some reason, I've got cosplayers in my mind, on the train going to a specific destination on a specific date, but having the train kind of be part of the event. So you get on at a certain station and you go to a certain place and you do your thing and then you get on and go back to the station. So the event, the transit is part of the event. And what came to mind for me is we've got a sort of Japanese historical museum up in nearby Boca Raton, which has played host to some cosplay and anime events in the past. I was thinking maybe from our neck of the woods up there. What do you think?
From UM up there.
There you go.
Obviously, like, a transfer would be involved.
But yeah, okay, so run the whole line from all the way down to Miami. Like, highlight the entire line. So really, you can get on at any stop along the way, and we would have, like, a little coordinator at every stop to help people get on. That'd be kind of awesome.
Well, I think that definitely is the way to go, because you don't want to limit it to just one stop, because then you're kind of defeating the purpose of using the train.
Okay, I was just thinking to make it more manageable, but right, we're just kind of brainstorming here, so I like it. So we would have our people, our event coordinators at every stop along the route, and to be in Boca Raton by a certain time, you'd want to get on the Miami train by a certain time, and so on and so forth. And then we would have this huge crowd of cosplayers going to some awesome, gigantic event at the terminal destination, and then a huge crowd of cosplayers going home. I think it would make the news to have people dressed up as anime characters on the train.
I think the train would love that. I think that would bring attention to them, where right now they just are a train. Like, they don't have the high number of ridership, I think, that they really want to have. I think they would buy into that, definitely. Put a whole bunch of freaks in costumes on there, they'd love it.
And I think it would get a younger, more hip demographic to at least have exposure to the Tri-Rail and to our public transit system.
Hopefully we can avoid the word freaks in the signage.
Yeah.
Freaks enter train here.
You know, you said that just so completely casually that I didn't even catch it. Yeah, a bunch of costume freaks hanging out. I mean, cosplayers.
Bunch of fucking weirdos.
you take the negative connotation, and I don't. I used to actually commute on the Tri-Rail to work in at the last stop, which is just north of West Palm Beach. And the second to last stop is actually an art school, art high school, like a FAME quality high school in West Palm Beach. And kids would get on all the way from Miami and take the train up to the school. And they really were genuinely like the art school freak type of high school kid. And there was this unspoken rule on the Tri-Rail at that morning commute and afternoon commute that the kids weren't allowed in the first car. So the first car was all the adults going to work that did not want to deal with the freaky art school kids playing like the tuba in the middle of the aisle or, you know, practicing their dance moves. So it's just, I've seen a lot of freaks on the train.
I have also made the mistake when I was commuting by Tri-Rail of riding on the wrong train during the morning commute to school.
And they are art school freak kids.
It occurs to me that they are also probably our target.
They are, which so then during those commuter times, you should go pass out flyers in all the other cars besides the first car.
Yes. Yes.
Hand out in the first car, too, just to let people, you know, prepare.
There will be no first car on the weekend of XYZ, just to let you know. You probably don't want to be here.
It will be all these children in costume.
Yes, yes, yes. So we've got... see, I'm really hung up on the logistics of having, like, a cool person in costume, a coordinator at every station, and, like, having a little mini event at every station along the way. Now I don't know where to take them. Like, I'm thinking, like, the Morikami or something in Palm Beach or something, but I don't know. We'd have to have some kind of a cosplay event at the end of the day, or, you know, at the end of the route, you know, something to go to, I suspect.
I really think this is not exactly what you're thinking. I think you could sell this for cons.
Take the train to the con?
Because people carpool to cons already.
Oh, yeah. Why not take Tri-Rail and we'll have a special shuttle that takes you from the station to the con or something like that? Or I don't know how pie in the sky it is to think you can coordinate with the transit organization, because I know they have their schedules to keep, but whatever. Get you from wherever you are to the con without the need of a car. And we're recognizing that this is a special event, and we're going to make sure you can get there. Going to cons over the years, I've run into situations where kids have been kind of stranded. Their ride's gone. They don't have a way to get home. They need to pay like $100 for a taxi. This
April,
could be big.
You talked all about your first experience at Chibi-Paw. How was the parking?
Oh, my God. The parking was awful. That's what I was going to say. Between the moms trying to drop the kids off and the people who did actually have cars, parking was... Then when we went down to Miami... How long did we sit at that one traffic light?
Jesus Christ. And then we finally just burst through the lines and did an illegal U-turn.
Right. Like, it was just ridiculous. And I honestly think that should be a huge selling point. Like, Con should pick a hotel near a mass transit system and encourage people to take mass transit. Because the parking is, and the actual commute getting there, which is out of control.
I think we just fill in the gap. I mean, the cons are limited in their choice of venues, you know, based on what's available for their size. I think we facilitate the transit, basically. And I think the con begins for these patrons as soon as they get to the Tri-Rail station. And I think it's cool, man. I think for a lot of people, riding the train would be novel. And I think it would kind of cement in their mind the association of riding the train with joy.
And they could even get like a discount, like show up with your train ticket and get $1 off.
Right. And these events are typically held on weekends. So it's not like it would really interrupt normal commuter times. So cool. All right, great. We have got a two-pronged plan to make our city and our region a better place.
They should hire us. Could just sit around and come up with these great ideas.
The Nerdstravaganza Geekification Consulting Group. Yes. In fact, we're going to realign this podcast to be all about consulting starting next episode.
How to make the world a better place, one geek.
The brainstorming works well.
Yeah, apparently you've been holding out on all these ideas.
I love that you really don't believe that was off the cuff. That makes me feel good about the idea.
Right. Agreed. Speaking of off the cuff, listeners, here's a suggestion for you. You should subscribe to our podcast and hear what other civic-minded ideas we come up with. Subscribe on iTunes or whatever podcatcher software you happen to use. Rate us favorably, write us a review, etc. And if you prefer streaming, I highly recommend you check us out on Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on G+, and join our secret society of super nerds at our Facebook.
And with that, we wish you a thoroughly engaged farewell.